Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
This is Bill Murdoch, and I'm the chief engineer here at WGN Radio. A summer job I'll never forget was working up at camp in Elko, Wisconsin for 4 summers, and I taught scouts how to swim, how to sail, how to row boats, how to canoe, how to kayak. The weather was good sometimes and bad sometimes. The food was incredible sometimes and really scary other times. It was a good time, and we will never forget it. One Summer Chicago is ready to give 30,000 teens and young adults summer employment, but we need your donation to make that possible. Visit onesummerchicago.org/donate or call 800-931-5707. That's 800-931-5707. One Summer Chicago 2017 is a fund of the Robert R. McCormick Foundation.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Now, this is me. I'm going to give you that phone number one more time. This radiothon has everything going for it, but tote bags and ringing telephones in the background. But that's what we're trying to do today. So if you can, please do now. Make a donation to onesummerchicago.org. That's onesummerchicago.org/donate. By phone, call 1-800-931-5707. More about that in a few minutes. In this city that works, there's nothing more important than working. We're trying to help 31,000 teens and young adults find work this summer. That's what this is all about. Speaking of a city that works, Chris Jones is in our studio. He is the, what's your exact title? What kind of critic are you?
Critic, theater, columnist, you know, Sunday columnist.
At the Chicago Tribune. In fact, 2 stories by you today, your sort of overview of the circus closing.
Yeah, it was a sad night.
Yeah, no kidding. And yet I saw last night on Twitter, you say, as a person from Manchester, you know, our hearts and prayers go out to everybody.
Yeah.
I knew you were a Brit. I didn't know you were from Manchester.
Yeah, born and raised.
What's Manchester like?
Well, I always think it's actually not unlike Chicago, which has been my home for a long time now. And the two cities have a lot in common. They're both proud cities. They're second cities, and they define themselves to a large extent in opposition to the first city in London or New York. And they both have this proud tradition of working class people. I mean, Manchester really was arguably the birthplace of the Industrial Revolution. It's an incredibly friendly place. It's just the people there are just spectacularly beautiful. It's that, you know, we Northerners sort of, you know, we cast aspersions on the South in England, and it's the people of Manchester are unique, and the city is like just like Chicago has gone through a transformation from a gritty industrial city. My father was actually born where this arena, where this incident took place. My father was born sort of around the corner from there, and his slum street has been cleared, and they've done all this new development.
It's described
there
as one of the largest arenas of its type in the world.
20,000 people. But when I was a kid, it was all working class houses, so terraced houses that were all knocked down and been sort of redone. Like the city, and the city has. There's also this pain of it being a music event in that city, because you think of the Manchester scene and Tony Wilson and all this sort of great music and art, an incredible club scene in Manchester, and just a city that, like Chicago, that has a proud culture distinct from anywhere else.
Is it also undergoing some of the same immigration evolution that European and U.S. cities are?
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely true. And I think, the fact that the suspect in this attack is apparently British national and from Manchester, from, I gather, not very far away from the arena itself, which I kind of had a feeling would turn out to be the case last night.
What do you say then?
Well, I just knowing that you know, so often that these attacks are actually perpetrated by nationals of the country where they take place. People often assume they're immigrants, and they're often not, because the world is sort of complicated and people's allegiances is complicated. And I think it's fair to say that Manchester over the years has had sort of troubles in integrating those changes in its demographic. Many of Manchester's surrounded by small mill towns, cotton towns, really, that were existed around textile mills. And of course, that all went away, and the population began to change. And, you know, there was the sort of a combination of welcomingness and resentment, I think is fair to say.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I don't know that, you know, who knows what was going on in this guy's head. But I mean, I don't know that it was anything to do with Manchester. I suspect my gut feeling would say that it was to do with issues well beyond the city itself. The city just has to pay the price of it, you know, John.
That's true, isn't it?
Yeah.
You hate to be one of those benchmark cities, like you remember a city in Belgium, or you remember Paris, or you remember Istanbul, large international cities. Manchester's in that league, maybe a little smaller than some of them, but this is going to now be remembered as the Manchester story.
Well, it's also, I think if you're a parent, as I am, I've got a 14-year-old and a 12-year-old, and I was telling, who've been, you know, I've taken them to Manchester lots of times, and I was trying to explain this to them this morning. And, you know, my 12-year-old said that when Ariana Grande was here, that most of his class had gone to that concert. He said, I think I knew 30 people who'd gone.
Yeah.
So I said, well, you know, if we'd been there, you might have gone. And then your dad probably would have been standing, because I would have picked him up afterwards, and I probably would have been standing right in that area where that bomb went off, which was basically that sort of foyer. But not just a foyer, it was the area where parents waited for their kids. You know, that, you know, a concert like Ariana Grande, a lot of kids are going by themselves. You got mom and dad with a car outside.
12 kids under, you know, 16, right, so far confirmed.
Right. And so you got mom and dad with the car outside sitting there or going, you know, who's not done that, right? So you sit there and you wait for the damn thing to end. And then you went and stood in that area.
Yeah, sure.
And that was right where it... Yeah, it's just sort of unfathomable to me. It is unfathomable that the targeting of kids. It's like, have we really come to this now? I guess we have.
I guess so. And yet, you know, you touched on something that I opened the show with, and that is, so what are we going to do about that? I think this is our reality. Maybe it'll get better. Maybe it'll, like some sort of ebb and flow, be less common in our lives. But I think this is going to be common in our lives. And I think the question is not, can we stop it? Because I'm not optimistic about that. I think the question is, what do we do about that? And my personal, you know, mission is to still go to the Ariana Grande concerts.
Yes.
Is to still travel to Brussels. Is to still go to the Cubs game, even though they checked us, you know, kind of haphazardly at the game last night. I think we need to continue to do what we do.
Well, I was at Steppenwolf last night. I went to see an Audra McDonald concert at Steppenwolf, and I'd seen all this right before it. It was a late show. It was like a 9 o'clock concert, and I'm there at Steppenwolf, and I'm watching all these people stream in, and I'm thinking, there's, you know, no bag checks, no security whatsoever, and that's true, you know, pretty much.
Really? Here.
Yes, it's true. So I would say that in New York now, if you go to a show on Broadway, or certainly if you go to a concert at Madison Square Garden or something, then you get a lot of security. You get some security here at, I always notice it at the Chicago Theater for comedy and music, but I would say the bulk of, you know, if you go to Hamilton or any of those shows, you're not seeing really the kind of security that would stop anything like this.
And what are you going to say if we do?
Well, I mean, how? I don't know. I mean, it's that equation of what price you're willing to pay to. I mean, who can, you know, the number of targets is so infinite, right? So if you say, once you say, okay, we'll target any soft target and we'll look for children, there's too many places. You can't possibly secure all those places and have a life with any kind of freedom.
You know, I said that it was haphazard at the game last night. It wasn't haphazard, actually. It was thorough. You know, everybody was cooperating at Wrigley Field. But it was also not scary. You know, it was the furthest thing in the world from your mind. We see it as more an inconvenience than as something that might stop a terrorist from actually going into Wrigley Field. But you're right, the front of Wrigley Field, the front of Sox Park, the front of the theater is just as vulnerable as inside.
Right. I mean, and those are all, I mean, people make this argument with airport security, right?
Absolutely.
That, you know, we're absolutely secure once you're through the TSA, but when you're checking in...
Have you seen the lines before TSA? It's amazing.
Right.
And in fact, some people are now proposing that we actually make it, you can't get to the airport until you pass through a security check.
There's an argument for it.
And I suppose there is. Mm. And then we'll argue about it or bitch about it, and it will or won't be effective. But at the end of the day, I'm just thinking out loud and reminding myself that, you know, you're right. We can't stop it. How are you going to live your life? And it has to be going forward. Ariana Grande's concert continues. She's on the road. They're still touring.
You have no choice but to go forward. You have no choice. I mean, there's absolutely no alternative. But it's like the people that died have no, in any kind of thing like this, you always see a disconnect between the people who suffer on unimaginable pain and any feeling of connection or, you know, any connection to international affairs or to any of the causes for it. I would say in all of them, this one for me, maybe it's because I'm from there, so I admit that, but this disconnect feels the most outrageous. And I think for me, it's because the demographic for that concert is just so young. You know, her core of her fans are 14 years old. 14 or 13 or 12. I mean, good Lord, you know.
If there was ever any sense to these things, and there isn't. There's no fairness, there's no courage, there's no sense. But this is another level of senselessness,
that's right.
Isn't it?
That's how it feels to me.
It's a 220. Chris Jones is in our studio, the Chicago Tribune critic, but also the Manchester native. I have a couple questions for you about other things that you've written about in the last couple of days. Do you got another minute?
Yeah, of course.
Stay right there. Your piece today about the circus had a quote in there that I thought, I love this quote. Also a good thing are the conversations and articles of Chris Jones, the critic whose story on the front page of the A&E section of the Chicago Tribune today is about the circus. How many times have you been to the circus in your life?
50-ish.
No kidding.
I went certainly...
As a fan and as a critic?
Yeah. I've been every year for certainly 22, and most years I saw the other company. If you're looking at all circuses, I'm definitely, you know, a lot. I'm kind of a circus geek. I like the people. They live a life, my friend, of... Not rather different from yours and mine.
How so? Oh, come on. How
well,
so?
You know,
we ride horses.
I was talking to the ringmaster, who is the last ringmaster, who was
that quote I'm going to get to.
Yeah. What did he? Well, go ahead.
Finish your story.
All right. Okay. But he was just saying how everybody has a superpower. Is that one you're going to get to?
It's part of the same paragraph. But tell your story. You better you tell it than I.
But it's just everybody in the circus does one thing, you know, like the guy that, you know, does a quadruple somersault in the air, or the guy that whispers to a tiger or something. They do one thing. And and so it's like a sort of a Justice League.
Yeah, no kidding. And his superpower, he said, was, do you remember the quote?
No, tell me.
Well, I like the quote for a different reason than maybe you do. The Last Ringmaster, you wrote. It sounds like a bad Spielberg movie, but this is the ringmaster himself sort of self-deprecatingly describing his role in the history of the circus when asked how it felt to be both the first African-American ringmaster of the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus and the final ringmaster for the whole shebang. He said, quote, I'm a black man in America, so I take certain disappointments better than other people.
Yeah.
Every now and then there's a leap of perspective that just hits you in the face and you
exactly.
don't see it coming. And I thought, yeah, maybe you're better at this than I am.
Yes.
And then he said, everyone has their superpower. Mine is actually detachment. I'm the one with the steady hand in the circus of emotions. This guy's good copy.
He was very good copy. But, you know, he wasn't telling 100% the truth there, because his detachment, I could see that detachment was a thin veneer during that. You know, it's interesting, the journalist, if ever you interview people who are about to lose their jobs, they're always particularly frank.
And what have I got to lose?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and in entertainment, people are always worried about what the ramifications will be of whatever they might say to the likes of you or me, right? When it's over, they give it to you.
But it is a type of entertainment whose time has come.
Yeah, I you know, there is a lot of issues. I was just saying this morning to some degree that it has the same problem. That one of the things that I thought that was interesting was that the circus was a general entertainment. So in other words, it had a bit of everything for everybody, and it was the big thing you went to. And people now, it's the same problem a printed newspaper has, frankly. It's or a department store. Now people want specific online channels for everything. They don't want
a big tent.
They don't want a big tent, and they don't want to be surrounded by people too much different.
I thought you're describing it as Macy's.
Yeah,
is so apt, and maybe Macy's will survive, but it's a struggle for all of those entities
out there.
But was it the treatment of, or the sense of the treatment of the animals that also doomed the circus?
I think without question that in large cities, among progressive young families, that the circus became sort of untenable in their view. Now, it is an issue that always divides everybody. And in all my writing about circuses, I tried very hard to reflect both sides of that. The people at the circus vehemently deny mistreating animals. They think of themselves as having been destroyed by people trying to raise money on their backs. On the other hand, if you talk to the people who believe very passionately that wild animals should not be part of entertainment, and that it's true that, for example, you see animals doing unnatural things, and they, you know, have found evidence over the years of mistreatment. So I think it is a, you know, it's a very difficult issue in some ways. I think I've arrived at a place where I go, you know, the lions, the tigers, the elephants, the time has come for all of that to be gone. But I did look out at the last show, and I was watching this troop of performing dogs having a good time. And I thought about my dog at home, cooped up in my place, and I'm thinking, you know, she'd have liked that.
She would have liked that. Better she do that. Right. That. So I'm almost as guilty with a domesticated dog as these people are with domesticated wildlife.
Exactly.
And yet I don't want the animals to be mistreated. If you persuaded me that they are treated well, and I suspect they are, I mean, it's upon their backs that these people are making a living.
Yes.
So it would behoove them to treat the animals nicely. But I'm also kind of curious about what do the animals think of their lives?
That's right. That's the million-dollar sort of unknowable in all of this. Is it what makes an animal happy? Is the tiger happy? And, of course, the tigers in this particular circus were bred by the trainer, right? So you could argue that no circus, that tiger wouldn't even be there because there would have been no reason to breed them, right?
Said the tiger.
Yeah. On the other hand, you can argue it's the most unnatural thing in the world. Then there's the argument, which the trainer made in the last show. He's arguing that if children in particular don't see, you know, wildlife up front, they'll never care about it, to which animal rights people usually reply, well, you should then go see them in their natural surrounding, to which the circus replies, not everybody has $20,000.
Yeah, I'm going to go to Africa with the kids.
Right. It's complicated, John, like everything else.
It's nice to talk to you, Chris. That the circumstances are what they are, that I asked you to come in, but I always enjoy talking to you about these other stories as well. Keep writing, and let's visit again.
All the best to you.
Chris Jones from Manchester, Once Upon a Time, now the Chicago Tribune critic. It's 2:30. This is WGN.